Welcome to How to Write Kai Papers, the podcast. I am Dr. Leonard Nacke, an associate professor at the Stratford School of Interaction Design and Business and the director of the HCI Games Group at the University of Waterloo in Canada. It is difficult to turn an exciting HCI research project into a successful Kai publication. This podcast is here to help you. This is episode 9, interview with Munmun De Chaudhary.
Hi everybody, this is Munmun De Chaudhary. I'm currently an associate professor at the School of Interactive Computing at Georgia Tech. And my research broadly is in human-computer interaction in social computing and health. I have been a part of the Kai community for about a decade now. This year it will be my 10th Kai.
When you say that, it sounds like we're getting old quickly. I'm excited that you could make it on the show. I want to ask you a couple of questions about writing Kai papers, obviously, but also a little bit about reviewing. I know that you've taken on several service roles in the SickKai community, so you've had a little bit of a look behind the scenes as well. And you've obviously gotten lots of great papers accepted and obviously denoted by a lot of people writing about your research in quite excited ways. And the impact of the presentations at the conference is something that I think you can be quite proud of. Let's start with a question in terms of what types of papers do you think the Kai community wants? And in your case, specifically in that health, with that health angle, what kind of papers, if I had a young student that wants to go into that field, what would you recommend to them? What types of papers they should be eyeing? Is there a certain methodology or area specifically that you would recommend to them?
So in my experience, Kai has been one of more broad communities who are open to various kinds of topics. I don't see that in a lot of other conferences or other communities, which often have a topical focus. I think the central theme that ties Kai papers together is the human. And most Kai papers, if we look back at the history, we would see that obviously topics have evolved over the years and there were waves of different styles and different methodologies that were more prominent in the community. But the common thread that ties it all together is how the human was central to those investigations. So I think for a new investigator, a new student, a postdoc who wants to publish in this community, I think a set of considerations and outlook that needs to be a part of the research program from the very beginning, and that is, what is it that we are doing for the human? And there are many ways to define the human. It could be a single person, the quintessential user, which has been central in the conventional definition of human-computer interaction. But I think in the last several years, we have seen many other ways that we think of the human or the user per se. And that includes, broadly speaking, pretty much anybody who is impacted by the technologies that we are building.
Interesting. When you're saying the human should be in focus, that's for many researchers going into Kai, that's one of the primary drivers of really what drives them to do this kind of research. If I put the human in focus, are you appealing to younger researchers to really do study type of papers? Is that still the kind of thing that young researchers should be looking out for? If you're submitting to Kai, you really want to do a study? Or are you also saying, when with human in focus, you could also write a paper about improving EMR, and the medical industry has lots of different tools, but medical records would be something that comes to mind for me right away, where it'd be like, okay, this is maybe an artifact that you could improve. But would you then always recommend, do a study with that right away? Is that sort of your recommendation in the Kai space?
Yeah, over the years, I have seen a lot of different methodologies. And like I was saying earlier, it's one of those communities which really embraces many diverse methods. And I love that because I think the community is more problem focused. It's not as much topic or methods focused. So it takes a broad overview of the topics or the technologies that we are building or studying, and also the methods. So user studies are definitely a very prominent methodology in the community, but a lot of the papers that I have written, for instance, did not necessarily have a user study component. The way to think about the human in sort of those set of studies is it can be in a number of different ways. It could be people who are using a technology and we want to study that technology with the human in focus. It could be we are building a technology and we want it to be used by a set of users. And those users or those humans may be engaging in traditional participatory design type of ways, or could be in other methods that are making inroads into the Kai community in recent years, such as speculative design, such as human-centered artificial intelligence, human-centered machine learning. So all of those are different approaches of human involvement in research.
Okay, let's dig a little bit deeper in that space. I really like that you're opening up the methods for Kai researchers. In your experience, as you're taking on new students, and you obviously have expertise in these different areas, is it something where you would put special emphasis on training somebody to do something, let's say, more technical? Or would you say design is really at the center of it? A lot of the times we're seeing the people that have many papers that there's usually a strong tie to design. But then I also know a lot of really technical researchers that are really emphasizing the artifacts that they're building and the study of artifacts. The question really is, what's easier? And I know I'm asking an impossible question here, but what I get a lot from junior researchers is they're looking for a good way to write that first paper, knowing that later on in your career, you'll have lots of different opportunities to write papers in different difficulty settings if you want. So what would be the one that you would recommend as a first paper for somebody interested? Would it be something like speculative design? Would it be somebody maybe learning participatory design? Is it something where you'd say, okay, if you're from a technical background, maybe just describe the artifact and the process of building it? Or what would you recommend if it, just look at it from your angle in terms of your students, what would you think?
Obviously, it depends on what the student also wants in their dissertation research and what the project is. I do tend to recruit technically oriented students, but the way I would describe them is that they often have a very open mind. So if they work on a project that needs a design component, then they're willing to take that up. Or if it needs a qualitative component on top of the quantitative analysis, then they're willing to learn that and pick up that skill. I would say that as a first paper, I think given the breadth that exists in the Kai community for a student, it might be to harness their existing, depending upon what, you know, background they come from. But I think it's more sort of the way they can tailor that set of skills to align better with the Kai community will be that thinking process, will be how you design the study. And the study could, again, be whatever method that student is comfortable in. I think it's more of an approach in terms of designing the study and the outlook towards the problem, and then eventually how the paper is written that makes a difference, not as much that they have to have design or have to have qualitative or quantitative methods nailed down.
One of the things that we always say in the community is contribution, right? When a student eyes their contribution, what kind of tips do you give them identifying that early on? And I don't know what your cycles are, but I know some labs have sort of these summer cycles where they go in at around this time after Kai is before Kai, they come back from Kai, they start their next Kai project, they work on it over the summer and then they publish it. Other people do like a yearly cycle that they start after the submitting of the last paper, they start building the next one and then they have a full year for that cycle. How do you do it? What's your secret sauce? Are you sort of early contribution focused, or do you let the students just freely go into whatever they're passionate about and then just give them some guidance as it comes closer to the deadline? Tell us a little bit about your process.
Yeah, love to share that. So I think it's a combination of the two. I would say it's more of the latter. We do follow an yearly cycle. I'm a big believer of not having deadline crunches. And the way we do it is, obviously, we have a lot of brainstorming sessions between the student. A lot of our papers have external collaborators too. You work in an area like health, you want the domain experts to be there. So we have lots of these brainstorming sessions about what the project is, what are the research questions that we are answering, and then why it matters. And that why thing I put a lot of emphasis on, because there are lots of things that could be done, but not everything is important or significant. And junior students sometimes struggle with that. They can feel that, oh, this sounds exciting to me, so I'm going to do a project on this. But at that point, I interject and say that, yeah, that's great that you're passionate about it. Now, what can we do to align your interests with a direction that is societally meaningful or relevant, that any other person, random person you might walk on the street might say that, okay, yeah, that sounds like an interesting question. It's a worthwhile research to think about. So that is a very big picture outlook. But as we do the research over the course of time, we hone it down to a set of concrete questions. We think about what is it, how are we going to answer those questions, what are going to be our concrete contributions, and then why should the Kai community care about those contributions? That is something that sometimes students may struggle with because they don't have the kind of broad perspective that a professor might. So that's when I try to help them out and say that, hey, Kai community has looked at these kinds of questions. Go and look X, Y, and Z papers at Kai from the past. And when you think about your problem, you should be advancing the literature that other scholars have been working on, because at the end of the day, we stand on the shoulders of giants, and we have plenty of giants.
I think that's a very good point. And as you said, you've attended it for a decade now yourself, or longer even, and you're starting to become one of those giants as well, even if you might not be aware of that. It's a slow process, but I think it's something definitely to keep in mind also, like, how does it fit in the institutional research landscape? And I was going to ask you about that, because that's different from every institution. I don't really know how it's done at Georgia Tech, but in Canada, we have grants, and then the students end up working on something that they're ideally passionate about, but that also hits sort of the goals of the funders. Now, with NSF being a big player in the US, I'm assuming there are similar concerns there when somebody pitches an idea. You said there should be a societal value and it should matter for Kai, but it should probably also be aligned somewhat with funding goals or something like that.
Yeah, it's pretty much a similar type of a thing in the US as well. And that's what I guess makes the job of the advisor both fun and tricky. Like, how do you satisfy the interests of so many different people? So I think that's what we target and tackle at the very beginning of brainstorming. Oftentimes the students are already supported through a certain grant, and when they were hired or put on that grant at the beginning, there was already some overlap of interests that were identified. Although that's not always the case, and it has definitely happened where a few years later the previous grant ends and now the student is on another grant which may or may not be directly relevant. So those are some tricky exercises that we have to do to align with what the funder wants, and then what the student wants, what the Kai community wants, and so on. So far, not been a huge problem. Many funders take a pretty relaxed view of the types of papers that can come out of a grant, though that is not always the case. And I think working with the students, one thing that I found valuable is to tell them about the big picture, like how all of the pieces, how all of their own papers are fitting together. And that I've seen that helps the student go one level, zoom out one level higher, and see how it's all fitting together. And I think that is a very valuable piece of training that I've seen that helps students, because then by the time they're ready to write their dissertation, they have a narrative in mind already.
I like this idea of narrative, because that's also something that we talk about in the course quite a bit. Like, how do you spin this in an interesting research narrative that fits your thesis goal, but also the sort of Kai objectives, and how does it all go together? Now, on that note, in terms of research narrative, let's go and take a transition to the reviewing side of things, which is essentially where we start not just looking for the contribution, and that's clearly articulated in the paper, but we are also giving reviewers more and more guidelines. Having been part of this process for Kai Play this year, as you might know, this has moved to a journal, so this is now tied into a journal publication like CCW and other conferences. But we started this year for the first time also looking into rubrics for reviewers to make that process a bit easier. So now we're asking for context, methods, and clarity, the trinity of what makes up a paper. Obviously, the contribution needs to be visible everywhere, but if you don't contextualize it, it's not good. If your methods aren't good, that's a problem. And if you don't write clearly, that's also a problem. These are the three aspects that I'm trying to cover in this course as well. Now, tell us a little bit about what that means for you when you're a reviewer. Like, how do you pinpoint a good paper and a bad paper? Because in my experience, most people that I've interviewed, they tell me they just need a couple of minutes usually to say, okay, this paper is a likely candidate, or this paper is no good. So what are your internal criteria that you apply to quickly assess whether a paper meets the threshold of being published?
So I pay a lot of attention to the introduction. I consider introduction to be a mini paper almost. And there are a few different styles of writing introductions as well. The style that I appreciate is the one where you situate why this is an important problem, what exactly, what other people have done in that space, what is the existing set of challenges or gaps in that literature, and how this paper is offering to contribute to that gap. And then what exactly was done in the paper in terms of a brief overview of methods, what was one or two key results or key findings of the work, and then a couple of sentences about the contributions and its implications. So why is this valuable to the Kai community? So that's the template I recommend my students to use as well. And I look for that in their introduction. So I do agree with other people you have interviewed, is oftentimes the intro is a pretty good indicator of what is to come in the paper. And I would say that there are obviously not so great papers that we see in the reviewing process. But then we do see quite a few really high quality papers, and that oftentimes makes the reviewing process rewarding and exciting to see what the community, which direction the community is headed, what are the questions that are exciting our junior scholars. So I think in general, I see that the quality of writing is high, and I would say the 50%, 40 to 50 percentile of the papers, and about 25% gets accepted. So kind of half, about half of what are pretty decent papers, I would say. I think one of the big criterias I see in reviewing is obviously these three things that you mentioned, but I also see reviewers paying a lot of emphasis on novelty. And I think it's unique to Kai. Journal papers don't operate that way. Journal papers would be say, yeah, I mean, fine, this problem has been studied for the last 30 years. These people are studying that with whatever new contribution, new findings, or a new method, and let's take a look at that. I think Kai is less excited about it. Kai is interested more about new perspectives that are brought into an existing problem, or maybe investigations on an altogether new problem that the community hasn't seen so far. Or another type of research I see doing very well in reviewing are papers that make connections between topics or methodologies or areas. I think that definitely plays in reviewers' minds when they're looking at these submissions.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's something that's really forgotten by people when they're writing the paper, because then the paper is solid. And it's always that threshold, like you said, you're already in the space where it could get accepted. But how do you make it to that last 25-20% of papers that actually manages to get in? And yeah, and like you said, novelty is really something that's sometimes really even hard to assess. And sometimes it's arbitrary based on the reviewer's subjective experience, right? Like what some reviewer might consider novel, another one might not do. And obviously, I don't want to get too sarcastic about the randomness in the process, but it's definitely something we tell people.
It's not perfect. Peer review is not perfect, and Kai is not an exception. But what I appreciate about this community is people are committed, and people do spend a lot of time reading the papers, participating in PC meetings and so on, that I don't see as much in some of the other communities. And that by just looking at the quality of the reviews also, they're long, they're detailed, and it shows that the person has read the paper. I mean, of course, reviewers sometimes would miss like the small paragraph that was somewhere in the paper that was very critical. Those kinds of things always happen. And that frustrates us as authors as well, that, yeah, it's in the paper. How come they didn't see that?
Yeah.
So those things happen, but I think overall I've seen that the quality of reviewing is pretty good. And even for my papers that don't get in, obviously it is sad and it upsets authors, especially the students. But over time I've seen there is always something valuable to take away from the review. There is something that you can incorporate in the paper that is going to make it better.
Yeah, so Moon, tell us your secret. Has there ever been a paper that has not made it? Because students always ask me that. I always tell my students, your paper eventually gets accepted somewhere, right? Like it might not be in Kai, but if I look back, I had like maybe one or two papers that I had to toss because it just didn't make it into anything. But overall, like most research, I would say, gets accepted. How do you feel about that attitude? Is that a good thing to tell students?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think students need to hear the success stories. They also need to hear about the not so much successful stories. And I think getting that fuller picture helps, because it's totally fine to not get a paper accepted. But a lot of students feel that it's end of the world and that I must be doing something wrong that my paper did not get in. But papers don't get in for a number of different reasons. And I think coming from a senior faculty and giving them the confidence that yeah, for me it has worked out. I have gotten a lot of papers accepted. And here are some of the things I did in those papers, which is what I think why they got in. But also there are papers that didn't get in, and it was still a worthwhile lesson to be learned.
Awesome. One final question about your personal take on ensuring fairness. This is something I'd always like to ask more senior people that have worked in the reviewing process for quite a bit. What are the strategies that you think that Kai is trying to employ to ensure fairness in reviewing? And I know that doesn't always work out. Like you said, there's a randomness in it, and there's obviously sometimes that the students don't quite understand why the paper has been rejected. But one of the things that we're doing now at Kai Play is we're letting people comment on their expertise, because there were always these questions about, now I got rejected by somebody that only has peripheral knowledge, but they gave my paper such a bad score and now it doesn't get in. And so now we have these comments to back up why that person had an expertise, maybe just in the methods, but not in the actual area. I think that's the first step in ensuring fairness. But what are things that you think are valuable to ensure fairness in the reviewing process?
Yeah, it is, I know, a conversation that has been happening in the Kai community for a while, and I know many people are adopting strategies. So that is definitely a really valuable one that you mentioned at Kai Play. I think one of the things, I was subcommittee chair last year for Interaction Beyond the Individual, and one thing we tried to do is to get a mix of different methodology people, because this was a sub-community that gets heavily like machine learning type of papers, and then it gets like interview studies with like, you know, 12 or 15 participants and sort of everything in between. So there is a huge diversity of methods, and something we wanted to make sure is if you have a quant paper that is being looked at by a qual reviewer, or a qual paper that is being looked at by a quant reviewer, that leads to a mismatch of expectations, and that's a problem. So that's one thing we did last year, was to make sure that we have representation of different methodologies. The other thing that I know a lot of subcommittees are adopting is demographic and geographical diversity, and that is very important as well. Because there are different styles of research, there are different perspectives of approaches that people adopt in different papers, and diversifying from that aspect and bringing in different demographic and geographical individuals to make sure that there is a balance in the review process as well.
And this is a very nice thing to say at the very end, because this is something where I think Kai can definitely improve, or HCI as a field as a whole. I don't think we're diverse enough when it comes to different voices that are heard. And like, even in a course like that, where I'm trying to teach people a certain way of doing things, I sometimes stop and wonder, am I just teaching something that just prevents new things to bubble up? Because now I'm giving people effective success strategies, but is that really what we want? Because we do want to give a rise to new voices and sometimes different techniques, but it is so hard to get some of that accepted. Like, how do you effectively teach for that? I haven't quite figured that out, but I think it's really important that we state that this is an important process that needs to start happening more and more. And so it's wonderful that you mentioned that. Thank you.
Yeah, and honestly, we all are learning, right? The Kai that I knew 10 years back was quite different. In the big scheme of things, Kai has been much longer. So 10 years may seem like a short amount of time, but I have already seen changes and changes in the right direction. So I think we all are learning, we all are trying. So I think that is a first step, because if we don't try, we are never going to improve.
Thank you very much. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Leonard.